Welcome to Q&A Quest episode 444. I'm your host, sad Destiny 2 fan, Mike Apps, aka Wheels, and with me as always. Where'd Dave go? Did I start? He disappeared.
Joey. Well, this is Smoke and Joe Gamer, the other co-host. I'm no longer Joey PP, I am Joe Coho. And, yeah, I'm not going to say anything mean about Destiny 2, because I don't want to hurt people's feelings. And I did have some good times with it at one point in time, and I think I just got burned out, that's all.
That's fine. Thank you, Fire Miner.
Pew says he'll say mean things about Destiny 2 for me, don't worry. Thank you. Thank you, Pew. Thank you so much. Take one for the team, bro.
And Dave is here with us. He must have had to step away. But I will go and I will get my long I don't know what I'm going to say things about Destiny 2.
Okay.
They may make me sad. They may make you sad. They may put you to sleep. I won't apologize. If you have not watched watched/listened to this show for a long time, you may not know some of my history and how I ended up being so obsessed with Destiny. As you know, I must be a giant RPG nerd because I am doing a podcast on rpgamer.com. Destiny 2. Great. Thanks, Pew. but I have also been a fan of sci-fi first-person shooters. Probably since first playing Doom, but really it was probably Unreal that really got me into it. Because Unreal was pretty cool and had cool music. But I couldn't actually play a lot of Unreal because we had weird computers and mostly Macs. And that brings us to a little old trilogy called Marathon, which I obsessed over because I could actually play them on the computers I had. Because, hey, Macs got their own Doom-like games, and they were pretty cool, and they had weird lore. And I enjoyed them quite a lot. And was very excited when they announced Halo on the main stage of Macworld Expo. And as most of you probably know, that didn't go so well eventually, because they promptly got purchased by Microsoft, and I had to become an Xbox fan to play lots of Halo, including probably thousands of hours of Halo 2, Halo 3, Halo Reach. But yeah, those were great first-person shooters, but again, big RPG fan, so when they split back off from Microsoft and announced they were doing a shooter RPG, I was pretty much there before there was concept art. And yeah, I loved that game from day one. You can look back on the old site and find my 3.5 out of 5 review of Destiny 1. Where I complained about one feature that really messed up the grinding that they promptly fixed a week after my review posted. Which is why reviewing a live service game is a waste of your time. Unless you plan on constantly updating it. Unreal, yes, Pew, Unreal Tournament was the best.
Yeah. I played a lot of that.
But yes, I became...
version.
Yes. I'm doing my Destiny 1 thing. We did the intro. I hadn't realized you
said that. Yeah, no. Yeah, I had to think about it.
No worries.
Yeah, go ahead.
But yeah, I was there from Destiny from day one, played tons of it. Here's some random memories playing it wasn't a raid, it was Prison of the Elders had like a super hard mode where you had to go through like 3 super hard rounds, and me and my friend, two of my friends, played through that till like 4 in the morning. Not smart. Playing Wrath of the Machines raids also till like 4 in the morning when I had a baby daughter. Also not smart.
That was just incredible parenting right there.
Yes. But yeah, I mean, this game and Destiny 2 have kind of been like the rock in my life since, when did Destiny 1 launch? 2014. That's 12 years.
I remember that year.
Yeah. That was the year the PS4 launched. I remember because I entertained myself with a Killzone game.
PS4 launch. PS4 launched in 2013. Excuse me. That means that this was actually a 2013 launch.
Okay. The PS4 was a 2013 launch?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because I got
it right away. I think I did get it in 2014.
Right. Well, in September 2014, I got the Glacier White PS4 with Destiny.
Nice.
Genuinely a hideous video game console. Yeah,
I see. People say that you're happy with the Destiny 1 remake instead of Destiny 3. I mean,
I don't think they would.
Yeah.
No.
I don't think they would unless it was not an always online game. Let me put it that way.
Like, what I would say in response to this is that, like, what functional difference are they expecting between Destiny 3 and Destiny 1 remake? Like, a reboot of continuity? That's kind of it.
Yeah. But yeah, if you go back and listen to these many of these episodes, you will find that I talk about Destiny 2 a lot, and to be honest, once I run out of stuff to do in this game, that's kind of a void I am having trouble trying to figure out. Like, obviously, we're not short of games. I don't know if you've noticed. There's a lot of games.
Games of this type have rapidly gone out of fashion because everyone else making them like rapidly runs out of funding. The other game of this type is Warframe.
Yeah, and it's kind of not exactly the same, but I have played lots of Warframe. It's a very good game, and I mean, they've been pretty open about how, you know, Destiny shaped their game, and
Warframe is a good company.
Yeah,
we can tell how distraught you are because you can't stop dying.
Yeah.
Wow. Rude.
I mean, this is bad.
But yeah, I will say, as an outside observer, watching Wheels descent into madness was something to be was quite noticeable. And like I mentioned last episode, Wheels absolutely was following the like cult of Destiny or whatever, like Twitter account that all it did was count down to Destiny's official release more than a year before it came out.
It's true. Accurate.
Take the gaming outside the Mac. Can't take the Mac outside the gaming. I don't know where I'm going with this. All I'm saying is you've been a Bungie fan for a scarily long.
Yeah, and I can't say like, oh, I was with Bungie with day one. I wasn't. I didn't have Macs. I had pretty bad. I had like a black and white Mac in middle school, so I played Marathon, I think, after the original Trilogy released. And
I was going to say, did you play the very sad Windows port of Marathon 2 Durandal?
No, I may have bought a copy of that at some point just for shits and giggles.
That seems like something deranged that you would have. Yeah. There's the Xbox 360 port of just Durandal for some. Yeah.
But I mean, I tried all the games, even Myth, which I don't really like Myth. It's not a great
RTS. I think there were two Myths.
Yeah, there was actually three, although the third was not made by them.
Halo was originally just essentially going to be another Myth.
Yeah. There was also Oni, which is not bad.
Ooh, that game's... Like, I played the PS2 version. Maybe that version's worse, but that game, PS2, is just absolute, like, dog vomit.
Yeah, it's better on PC.
Yeah, I'll believe you.
No Mac version, I don't think. I don't remember. I'm out of Mac.
It's still a very funny game to look at on PS2 because it has the Bungie logo and the Rockstar logo, and it came out like 9 months before both of them would suddenly become the biggest developers of that generation.
Yeah.
But a game that no one was that enthused about, but is very funny because there was a sequel in development at one point, and you can tell that even the developers weren't that enthused about it, because the working title was Oni 2 Death and Taxes. Like, we make this only because it is inevitable. And then it was canceled.
But yeah, I will say, give people in the Destiny community some slack. They're going through it right now, and maybe if you haven't been invested in a live service game like that, you might not understand. Like, they're raging at Marathon. This is not Marathon's fault. I don't care what stupid conspiracy theories you come up with. This is not that game's fault. It's not, and I like that game a lot. And it's fun to have that franchise back. But yeah, the future for Bungie in general is a giant question mark right now, and it's, yeah, I don't know. It's, we'll see. It's, and the worst part is this last update to the game put it in the best place it's been in probably 5 years. And, yeah, Steam numbers have been way up, and apparently people have looked at, like, with the console numbers included, the game has gotten above a million concurrent players this past week.
Everyone comes back to pay their respect.
Is that going to change anyone's mind? Probably not, unless they're also all spending money in the Eververse store. Maybe not even then. I don't really know.
Yeah, no,
I don't know,
like,
the financials of the game or anything like that.
The problem is that, like, if it changed someone's mind, that's a 5-year project. Like, there's not a this on it.
I mean, a 5-year project, unless they're just gonna continue doing Destiny 2. Because I know they had one alternate plan to relaunch and rebrand it Destiny Infinity.
Like, would Marathon all over again.
Yes. All comes back to Marathon.
Or like Garathon.
But it sucks, because yes, they finished their original 10-year story, which, you know, that a lot of people bounced off after that point. But they were starting to, but over 10 years, they built up lots of lore, and there's like a bajillion unresolved plot threads. And they even dropped one that was setting up stuff for the future in this patch. Probably because this patch was originally not supposed to be the last patch. It was just a big refresher of things.
Mm-hmm.
So the franchise is obviously valuable, so I don't know where it's going to go from here, what's going to happen. And that's...
Apparently the mobile game ate shit last year, though, so... The IP as a whole is in somewhat of a rough spot. I'm sure that something will get done with it. Honestly, if I had some sort of control at, like, Sony/Bungie, it would be my inclination to try to turn it in, try to take some of that and reconstitute it into a more traditional saleable game. We'll see.
Yeah, like... There's
a lot of stuff you can put together, and there's an audience that would buy that because people love that. Love Bungie style shooters.
Yeah. Just, I have tooted this horn for a long time, but no one else really makes an RPG like Borderlands. And you could do a bunch of one-off Destiny smaller games.
You could chop apart elements of Destiny 1 and 2 and turn them into Borderlands games. Have like 5 games before you had to start thinking about new content.
Yeah.
Beautiful dream. I'm sure that technically the engine is kind of a mess under the hood, but you know, you make lemonade with the lemon.
Yeah. I mean, Marathon runs beautifully, so... That but you know, it's probably running on a newer version of this engine.
Yeah, I mean, Destiny like never ran badly. I'm just saying that like,
yeah, it's
that doesn't mean the development tools are good.
Yeah.
Like, infamously, Destiny 1. Like, part of the reason Destiny 2 ended up happening was that Destiny 1's dev tools were bad.
Oh, yeah, I remember reading a lot of those horror stories, like, having to wait overnight.
Like, an entire day for a level to build.
Yeah. Not good.
Jeez.
Yeah, it's a bad tool chain, and it basically, you know, for a live service game, like, your tool chain needs to be... because you need to be making content. You know, they were also kind of, you know, mapping that out as it happened.
Yeah.
Prior art was straight up MMOs, and those had a very different cadence, very different way of dealing with players.
Yeah, I think there's also just the problem that we were discussing this in the stream chat before. I was talking about it with this with Pew earlier. Just like they put out, they spend all this time putting out all this content, and like their most of their players eat it up so quickly. You can't keep up
the
player base, which is kind of I don't want to say toxic. I would say a complainy fan base.
Okay. There is no escaping how much that like. You end up, like, by nature, catering to the fan base you already have. And when you do that, you ultimately produce content that is insular to new players. Which means that you have to cater more to the fan base you already have, who ultimately are the people most ready to slam through new content and then complain that the game is dead.
Mm.
Like, you see this in every MMO as well. Oh, pleasing some people.
It's probably a lot cheaper to make content for those other MMOs than it is to make for stuff in Destiny, though.
It's...
But, yeah, that's the spiel.
Instead, long live Destiny.
Yeah. I mean, you'll probably see me playing it a lot on stream for a while until I'm not, and then maybe I'll play some Destiny Rising, and then probably Warframe, and who knows what else. I am in search of a new home. Well, let's talk about Nintendo Directs. Actually, let's answer some of these.
That first
elitist fan base SP. Yeah, that's, you're not exactly wrong.
You're not wrong.
What was it? Oh, hold on, let me scroll up a little.
See, I'm the other type of player who falls behind and then gets mad because, like, what do you mean there's more content? I'm so far behind, I'll never catch up. Yeah.
Guess I'm done.
What was the reason for Marathon Infinity did not originally have a Windows port and Marathon did? I don't think it's sold anything
on one didn't.
Yeah,
Marathon 1 didn't. Did because it had been.
Marathon 1 didn't have a Windows port. Only Marathon 2.
Yeah, 2 had been a bigger success, so they moved it to Windows. What that would do, and it did nothing, so they didn't do Infinity.
Yeah.
Like... people just sort of, like, that player base was drowning in shooters at the time, between all the build engine stuff and id. Like, there just wasn't enough to, like... Whereas, like, Mac players were getting all of those years late if they got them at all.
Yeah. Say Doom fans love to talk about how making Doom open source drew more people to the franchise. I believe them. But at the same time, why don't I hear anyone talk about Aleph 1, the Marathon open source?
You're not looking in the right places. I hear about Aleph 1 quite a bit.
Not just from me, either.
But not even from Wheels, who I have strategically tuned out.
And I just found out that apparently there's a port of Pathways into Darkness on the Aleph 1 engine.
That game is fucking weird.
Yeah.
There's some RPG in it. There's a lot of time travel in it.
Yeah. But yeah,
My Switch.
There's people out there that talk about Aleph 1. I mean, you can play that multiplayer online, and it's basically proto Halo multiplayer.
Yep. Yeah, like Aleph 1, like it's never going to be as big as Doom because Marathon was never as big as Doom, but that doesn't mean that it doesn't have like nice devoted following.
Yeah. I mean, I was just going to say, for Language 5 translation, saw that was mean machine translation.
Oh, yeah.
Vomit.
Yeah, like, there's like this, like, you have to, like, inspect every translation that comes out now, because, like, at the time it's just like, oh, no, any Japanese, but I put it to a robot, and said that this is what it says. Like, no. That's less than nothing. That makes it worse.
That's worse.
Like now there is going to be like some contingent who like aren't willing to touch the project either for like, well, no one's going to care that there's a good translation now, or like, well, I guess we're just going to live with that. Like, it just increases the problems that fan translations already have. I don't like it.
Yeah.
For those who were not in the way, in the know, Languisseer 5 had someone be like, ah, I'm releasing a translation, and then like all the information was like, by that I mean I put it through like 3 different AI models and hoped that whatever came out was accurate, who knows. There was an existing, like, partial translation used for a guide that was also, as noted in the patch notes, actively ignored.
Fun fact, computers are bad with human language. Even
also,
computers running LLMs.
I will also bring up that that patch notes also include the utterly dire note that no human has proofread it.
Oh god. Oh.
Like the author of the patch straight up said no one has proofread this. It's better than nothing, says someone who responds to my desire to repaint my house by throwing dog shit at it. I apologize for that metaphor, but I feel it was accurate.
Well, like, if you still need people to proofread stuff before it goes live, or fix it after it goes live and it's wrong, then what is even the freaking point? You're not saving any money, are you?
No. Actually, they spent a great deal of money, because tokens are now expensive.
Yeah. Well, and it's just they want to replace all their humans with robots. It's like, okay, but who do you think your customers are going to be when no one has jobs and no one has income and no one has money?
This had no path to profitability to begin with. This was inflation,
yeah.
But...
Yeah.
But you know, probably this made no sense. This was a choice. This is the sort of thing you do to clout farm in fan translation, the worst possible motivation to do anything. Okay. Next question. All this is angered up my blood.
Well, let's talk about the Nintendo Direct real quick, because I'm in a boss fight and I can't stop and read the questions.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Sure.
There was some cool stuff in there, especially if you just want to play Switch 2 versions of things, which I think a lot of people forgot is kind of the customer base they're going for. Mm-hmm. But yeah, and a lot of Japanese RPGs with those.
Including the one I've been waiting for, and I will finally get to play this November.
I think that also is probably worth pointing out, just because it's probably, like, what we're referencing is Metaphor: Ray Fantasio has been announced for Switch 2. I think that's probably the death knell for the idea that there's going to be a re-Ray Fantasio. Yeah. Like, the game they released is the game they released. If you've been holding out for the Graded Atlas version, it's probably not happening.
I wasn't holding out for that. I was actually hoping it never happened because I still haven't finished.
Yeah, I've seen people that are like, oh, I'm just going to wait for the upgraded version. It's like, well, it's not happening.
I'm going to wait for the upgraded version of this Game of the Year candidate.
Right.
It's exhausting. It's like, your experience has not been made worse by the existence of a new version. That is a brain worm to kill.
Yeah. I would say my only thing, and this is a totally personal thing, is just I got Persona 5 Royal when it went on sale for $30 on PS4 and felt like, okay, yeah, you know, that's a good price that I'm willing to pay for something I already played the original version, and I never finished Royal, and
which is good.
But I mean, but to your point, it's like I loved Persona 5, and yeah, my only gripe with Royal is the fact that I guess I was just a little burned out and just wasn't ready to replay the whole thing again, with the awesome improvements. Right. So, I would prefer if, I'm not sad if Metaphor never gets an updated version, and Metaphor already has everything I love about Persona 5 and all the quality of life improvements that
wonderful
were
game
added. Yeah,
got a few dungeons in and got distracted, but I'm gonna get right back to it on to where it'll be more pleasant than I'm playing it on the deck.
Yeah, I got to a part where I haven't been in there yet, but it's like a Persona 5 dungeon. It's like they want you to stealth it, and if you get caught, then bad things happen to you. And I haven't really gotten into that yet, because I got to like a coastal city and they were like, oh, you gotta infiltrate his place and you only have X amount of days to do it, and I'm like, you know what, I'm gonna go do some side quests.
It's just how Metaphor functions, though.
Yeah, I was like, you know, I haven't played in a long time and I just want to go do these side quests in this other dungeon and make sure that I'm leveled enough, and I've got plenty of time, it's not a big deal. But I'm remembering when I was stuck in that creature's stomach and I thought I had time to get out and collect all the items and wait for the acid. And then I died and had to do it again. And that was, yeah.
Batman.
And then I played a little bit of SMT5, and not that I didn't like it, it's just that it was really hard. And then they announced, you know, the Vengeance update for modern, or for other platforms besides Switch, and I got that on Xbox, and it's like, okay, you know, I want to play this, because there is an easier difficulty if I ever felt like dropping down, and there's higher frame rate and slightly better graphics, and it's like, alright, yeah, I'm cool with this.
But yeah, Vengeance itself was different in the sense that, like, all of the new content was split into an entirely new campaign.
Okay. Right, because
like if you did the
right, and I was like, well, yeah, first I want to just do the new stuff. I don't want to do the old stuff. So
yeah, like if you don't select, if you select the campaign, you know, like creation or balance or something, like that's just the old campaign with very little about it, other than some balance.
Right.
Yeah, with the Canon of Vengeance, somewhere between a Maniac's version and Shin Megami Tensei 4 Apocalypse type thing.
Okay.
But yeah, so Metaphor showed up at the
think we all kind of knew that was coming, you know.
Like, it was a persistent rumor, but we were kind of waiting for it to be announced.
And, well, we've also already commented on Discord about the fact that Persona 4, whatever it's
Revival.
Resurrection, Revelation. Revival.
Revival. Revival. I keep saying revival. I'm not sure why being ignored.
I don't know. I there's so many R's. I don't know.
It's revival, like you're reviving an old TV.
Okay. I thought it was going to be Persona 4 rerun because of all the TV, you know?
Yeah, like revival is a different TV. It's less on the nose and less funny, but probably has less negative connotations.
So we've already just commented on it. I do think it's odd that it's not getting the Switch 2 release right at launch, although, I mean...
We don't know that it's not getting one at launch. We know it's not announced.
Okay.
My suspicion
would
be...
And Persona 3 Reload got the port at a later date, is what I'm getting.
Yeah, my suspicion would be it'll probably be post-launch, but, like, I wouldn't say count it out, because I think part of the reason that they've done it this way is to avoid cannibalizing Metaphor sales.
Yeah.
Like, they just announced Metaphor, a game that's a couple years old, that is coming to Switch 2 in November, 4 months before Persona 4 Revival comes out on anything. Why announce also Persona 4 Revival is coming out and potentially cannibalize people that are, like, going to just play the more recognizable IP?
Right.
So...
And also, Switch 2 getting a port of Dragon's Dogma 2, which I...
That is fascinating, because that game runs like shit on everything.
Right, and the thing is, I saw that trailer, I'm like, oh wait, I bought that game, like, around Christmas time and played a few hours. I should get back into that, and I don't know, I had a pretty good experience with it, but my understanding is the longer you play, the worse the frame rate gets.
Oh, so beats it's my Skyrim.
The thing is that, like, in like, coinciding with this, Capcom has been announcing all sorts of, like, updates that they're doing that all seem to exist to address things that piss people off about the original release. Like, they removed a bunch of, like, DLC. They're making changes to, like, they removed a bunch of, like, one-time purchase, like, in-game bonus DLC. Like, that's just all getting delisted. They changed how fast travel works. They're changing how saving works. They've changed how, like, a mechanic that pissed people off called Dragon's Plague works. So they've just, like, done... They've just made a bunch of, like, updates to it that are clearly designed to just, like... It's the apology tour for, like, things that pissed people off when the game came out in the lead-up to the Dark Arisen content being released on Switch 2 and every other platform. Hello?
Hello.
Yep, we're here. We were listening.
Well, hopefully it runs good on every platform now.
I have my doubts. But they also announced Onimusha Way of the Blade. When I saw that, I was like, hell yeah, I was right. Because I have been saying, since they announced Pragmata, like, oh, Onimusha is also going to come to Switch 2. They just haven't announced it yet.
That makes sense.
Like, I was saying that, like, because, like, the second that it's not just Resident Evil, it's like, well, they're clearly doing this with all of them. So yeah, Onimusha, Way of the Sword, coming to Switch 2, same day as everything else. Notably, it's the only one that they've, the only RE Engine game on where they've actually instituted a 30 FPS cap with the option to let it, to put it in a mode that will allow it to, like, be in more of a 40 FPS container and try to get it to BRR its way to a slightly smoother frame rate. But, other, like, all of the other RE Engine games on to, like, Capcom's just, like, gone with the let-it-rip strategy of, like, the frame rate is... It shoots for 60 and sees how far it can get. So that's interesting. But yeah. What else was there?
Well, I want to say this. Of course, this didn't surprise me because the internet. But we got that short trailer, Ocarina of Time remake. I'm very excited about this. And people were complaining about the way Link looked, and I'm like, all you can see are his fucking feet. What are you talking about?
Welcome to the internet. So.
Yeah, the internet has never seen something that it doesn't feel like complaining about.
It's like, you don't like his feet? Then don't look at him. I don't know what the he's sleeping. Yeah. What did you... I don't get it.
Fire Miner points out we haven't talked about Muramasa Rebirth.
Yes.
Yeah, that was a surprise.
That game was stuck on the Vita / Wii.
Started out as a Wii exclusive, got re-released on Vita with some weird DLC that I never got around to playing. One of the reasons I reacquired the Vita was to play that, because I had a digital copy of that. And now I'm like, maybe I'll just wait, play it on something else, you know? But that's a great game. I love it. I never did the thing where you beat it with both characters and then do all this weird, hard...
Don't worry, there are five now.
Yeah.
Five characters?
I'm like, so maybe I should just...
The Vita version added at least three more characters that might have added four more.
Yeah,
like that was the thing that always threw me was that like problem with Muramasa was not that it lacked for content. In fact, the problem with many Vanillaware games is they have too much content.
Well, the nice thing
this is the room with electricity. Unfortunately, it has too much electricity.
Well, nice thing about that game is it's marvelous. So the Switch version will all be on that. Card.
It is on cart. Yep, I have it on pre-order.
And I'm still bummed they are not publishing the new version of Grand Blue Fantasy Relink.
More like Grand Butt Fantasy.
Well, I'm just going to buy the reduced price upgrade to the Ragnarok edition.
Well, good for you.
It is good that it will be available on main platform.
Yeah, I got a good deal on the deluxe edition on PS5 physical copy that came with some cool stuff, and now they're telling me, oh no, you can just buy an upgrade for the new version. I'm like, thank you very much. And actually, I did just buy all of the DLC characters for Grand Blue Fantasy versus Rising. So, and that I'd really like to dive into the story mode on that as well. So with JRPG July coming up, I have a lot of games on my list that I want to put more time into.
Yeah, I'm just trying to remember all the other things that were announced.
I'll break down those walls sooner or
later. You can bet your boots on that. Okay,
it was a week ago. Atelier game announced in a sizzle reel.
Yeah,
very funny. All three Xenoblade mainline games getting.
Yes.
Switch 2 editions. We had Xenoblade Genesis. That's kind of a big one. But Lies of P Complete Edition. Like, I finally can play that.
Hell yeah. Not only that, again, it's being published by IM 8-Bit. The physical edition is, so that's another game all on cart.
Yes, which is nice because that's a lot of game. Don't Make Cry 5 Devil Hunter Edition. That was already like a week.
I'm just going to put this random item on stream here.
Like, I'm very excited to have a good portable DMC5.
Hell yeah.
And that's currently like $30, I think, which is at least a reasonable price for something that's a bit on the old side.
Yeah, I wanted to briefly go back to Xenoblade. Were you done with your current thought?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. I'm sorry. Yeah, no, so Devil May Cry, I am excited about that. Maybe someday I'll beat the Series X version, which has ray tracing, but then I never turn it on because it murders the frame rate, and I'd rather play at the crazy high frame rate.
I just have no idea what ray tracing would offer to that video game.
What it does is, when you're walking down the street and you look in a window, you can see your reflection.
I hate it.
That's all it does. When you look in a puddle, you can see your reflection. That's it.
Like three places in the game that are raining.
So Xenoblade, when I was doing my Xenoblade Chronicles X Definitive Edition Switch 2 Edition, when I was streaming that on RP Gamer briefly before I got upset at the game and didn't want to play it anymore, because it's just a weird game. But anyways, I was speculating on what their next move was going to be, and I was predicting a 2 Definitive Edition, and then they were going to do 4, and I was kind of partially right, I guess. So, yeah, all three games getting Switch 2 updates, I was not expecting that. And then the Genesis game, it's not a numbered entry, it might be some kind of prequel type thing, but that does look very cool. I'm looking forward to playing that.
I would suspect it's the start of a new
It's basically 4.
Yeah, I think they don't want to name it 4, so we don't think it's connected to the other ones. I think it's
a direct sequel to 3 or something.
Right, yeah.
And so I immediately bought the Xenoblade Chronicles 1 upgrade for, what was it, $10? And it's gorgeous. I mean, so what I'm going to say is I played the original game on the Wii when it came out. And I remember thinking like, okay, like, yeah, these graphics look like a PS2 game, but man, the art direction, just the sense of scale, looking up and seeing the giant robot and climbing up his body and like, yeah, very impressive. And of course I died a lot because it does have tricky combat. And so I think I played maybe 10 or 15 hours and either got bored or burned out or forgot about it or something. And then Xenoblade Chronicles X, when that got announced for Wii U, I'm like, oh, it's like the first one, but with better graphics. And then it wasn't like the first one. It was very different. And somebody told me, oh, you got to play like 20 or 30 hours to get your mech. And I'm like, but I want it now. So then when 2 came out on the Switch, it was like, okay, now this is a numbered entry. This looks, I want to play this. Okay, great. And I love that game. And that really had kind of a feel of like a Studio Ghibli kind of thing going on. And I like that. And yeah, I love 2. So when the 1 Definitive Edition came out, it was the same kind of thing. It was like, okay, I'm very excited, like noticeably better graphics, same awesome art direction. It is a Switch game. Of course, it's not going to look as good as what you're getting on PS4 Pro or the 1X at the time. And it wasn't that big a deal. But I struggled with it a lot until I discovered that it has a casual mode. I'm not ashamed to say I turned that on. The combat is now incredibly easy, but now I can actually enjoy the story.
Filthy casual.
Right, and now, so where I'm going with all of this is that, in my opinion, this Switch 2 upgrade of the Definitive Edition finally gives this amazing, gorgeous artwork, like the graphics that it really deserves to really help it shine. And I'm playing it, and it's like, okay, yeah, this, like, X is a weird spin-off. I didn't care for it that much, but I'm also going to wait for the upgraded version of 3 before I really put any significant time into that. And that's fine. I can work on this version of 1. And then 2, I'm not really ready to go back into yet, although I could see myself getting that upgrade and maybe doing some post-game stuff that I didn't get around to.
Too bad. You're playing the kart racer mode of 1 for the next 10 years.
I mean, I played 1 on 3DS and thought it was amazing. And I think these upgrades are pointless, but I will enjoy them regardless.
Yeah.
These games look amazing. They did not need any upgrading, but I won't complain.
Yep.
In addition, Xenoblade Genesis, we got a much more extensive look at Fire Emblem a Fortune's Weave that's looking like a massive video game, like four different campaigns.
That looks cool. Yes.
We didn't see much of Dusk Bloods, but they talked about having closed network tests this summer, so we'll definitely hear a lot about that when people inevitably leak details about it. Then it's Space Marine 2 port? That was weird.
I haven't played any of the Warhammer games. I don't have any interest in Warhammer.
You're free. Tales of Eternia remastered? That was a weird thing to see, although we'd known about it. So one of the things that...
I was just going to say, apparently the Eternia remaster has new dub.
New dub. It seems to be just a new translation entirely, which is an interesting choice, but there were scenes in Eternia that just weren't translated in various versions, so all the best for that. And it's nice that you can call something Eternia now, because that new He-Man movie has fully dive bombed and is probably going to lose them like $150 million.
Oh boy.
Yikes.
So $200 million budget currently has made $70 million worldwide without accounting for marketing. That's probably going to lose like $150 million.
We don't have the power.
Okay, so among the actual cool things they had not heard about, Final Fantasy Resonance, that was an interesting thing to announce. That is an HD 2D remake, reimagining of a tragic gacha game, Final Fantasy Brave Exvius, which, by all accounts, was very good, other than the fact that it was a gacha game. Now it's not a gacha game anymore. We're free.
We're free.
That's coming to Switch, Switch 2, and PS5. The thing that made me start hooting and hollering was when they fucking started showing me some Kingdom Hearts.
Mm.
Kingdom Hearts 1.5 and 2.5, it's coming to Switch and Switch 2, and Kingdom Hearts 2.8, a Final Chapter Prologue, and Kingdom Hearts 3 plus Remind are coming to Switch 2 specifically, because they wouldn't really work on Switch. Cloud versions were immediately, like, summarily jettisoned into the sun, completely delisted, gone. Just as a little treat, they also showed the first trailer for Kingdom Hearts 4 that we've seen in years. So that was nice, and that's coming out on Switch 2 the same day as every other platform that it's coming to, which is very nice. Based on some other leaks floating around, that's the end of next year.
Okay. Kingdom Hearts 4?
Yeah, but based on some other leaks floating around where, like, a couple of different retailers got a product description that talked about, like, the Kingdom Hearts 1 through 3 collection that you can get on, like, Switch and Switch 2. It's just, on Switch 2, and it's like, yeah, play these in preparation for Kingdom Hearts 4 coming in the end of 2027. And it's like, huh. Well, all of these say the same thing, so it was probably provided by Square. Oops. Because conspicuously, that trailer did not give us any indication of when the game is coming out. I would suspect that they didn't want to, because, well, they're trying to promote FF7 Revelation, which comes out sooner.
Mm.
But yeah. Kingdom Hearts 4.
You gotta play 1 through 3. I have them all.
Why play those when you can purchase Power Slave Exhumed for your Switch in this wonderful Saturn case?
No.
It is a very good game, though. I wouldn't play it in lieu of Kingdom Hearts, but play both.
Well, it's... I was thinking about this the other day, all this, you know, all this freaking stupid Gamergate crap, and like...
Why?
So no. When I was younger...
Why? Why?
No, what I'm gonna say is, when I was younger, I knew... Like, I remember... I didn't want to play Kingdom Hearts because I think I knew a girl who played it, and I was like, I'll never play that. That's a girl's game. That game's for girls. And now, as an adult, I'm like, you idiot! Those are the girls who might have actually gone out with you, stupid! You know, so.
I will say, once again, something that I say in a lot of conversations at this point. A lot of the backlash against Japanese RPGs from the late 2000s was a combination of homophobia and misogyny.
Yep. And now it's like, that's all I can say is, don't you want to meet women who share your hobbies and interests, who aren't just like, ew, video games, I can't go out with you. Like, what is it that you want? I don't get it! Ugh!
They want to be miserable, that's what they want.
So yeah, no, they're just mad about it.
They announced a sequel to Stellar Blade, which I'm excited about, and I don't want to read any discourse about it, and that's fine.
Stellar Blade 1 is coming to Switch 2 for some reason.
Yep, so there's a new protagonist with the same name, and she punches things. So she doesn't have a stellar blade. She has stellar fists, maybe. I don't know.
So why is it called Stellar Blade?
Fist of the North Star.
I don't know.
Why isn't it Stellar Fist? Why is it Stellar Blade?
Because
title?
Because then it would be harder to market. There, yeah, I've answered your question.
So, I don't.
Or
I don't,
is the
you know what?
The blade is her fist.
Like, in the first game, she uses a sword, but I don't know if that's the Stellar Blade or if this. I don't know. I haven't gotten far enough in. My only gripe with Stellar Blade is just the enemy designs are boring. They all just look like these weird mutant insect things, but yeah, it's kind of a neat game so far. There's a. You know, it's fun to play. It's like Sekiro if there were things to make it easier, you know?
So that's not fun. Sekiro.
Not at all. Good
what
point.
What you have just described is not Sekiro.
It's not Sekiro at all. Pokemon Pokapia expansion under the sea.
Yeah, yeah.
There'll be no accusations, just friendly crustaceans under the sea.
Dude, DMCA. Disney's gonna murder us.
You mean The Simpsons?
Simpsons is owned by Disney.
The Simpsons is owned by Disney.
No, but I was I was singing the Homer parody.
Yeah, but it's still owned by Disney.
Oh, okay, fine. Hopefully we don't get sued. Sorry.
I hate that the Disney owns The Simpsons, but such is life.
So you can. There's a new underwater area. You have a new move that puts a bubble around your head so you can actually dive underwater. Because up to this point, if you were submersed in water for more than like 3 seconds, you would get transported out of it because presumably you were about to drown. And it's a kid's game, so you can't drown in a kid's game. They don't want Ditto to drown.
Boring.
So now you can build a city underwater, I guess, and that looks neat. So it's a new city with some new Pokemon to find, and that's exactly what I would want from a Pokapia expansion. It had a really neat story. I cleared the story, which doesn't mean anything because now you can still just build forever to your heart's content. To me, that's what I would want, is just give me more towns to explore, more cities to build, more quests to do, more Pokemon to find. That's what I want. So, very excited. And Wheels, are you going to get that One Piece food game?
Of course I am. What kind of stupid question is that?
Cooking game.
Are you going to ask if I'm going to breathe next?
Are you?
Yes, I am.
Good.
Oh, and I want Dave to explain Hiku Niku. What is this?
I think it's some kind of puzzle game. I ain't played it.
Oh, I thought you were more versed in weird Japanese stuff. Okay.
Generally am, but I didn't play it. Play the first one.
It looks... I don't know how to feel about it. It kind of looks like Katamari a little bit, just in terms of the art design. But it also looks like...
Apparently the first one is on hyper sale right now.
Okay. So, Malevolent robot. Your curiosity has never been cheaper to say. It has a potato.
I'm sorry. I'm also playing Tenshi No with that at the current moment.
Okay. No, I thought maybe you were familiar with Pikuniku. Okay.
Yeah. No, I'm only passingly familiar with Pikuniku, but
because it does kind of look like this lower. It looks kind of low budget, but not in a bad way. It just looks like a weird Japanese game. Yeah.
Life is better with low budget things.
And then, all right, this is something like, you know that I like Jujutsu Kaisen. I've watched all the most recent episodes. So far, this Colon game story arc isn't doing it for me, but it's like Vampire Survivors, but with Jujutsu Kaisen characters. And I'm like, it's called Rumble Survivation for Survivaton. I don't know.
I am fully uninterested in more things that are just Vampire Survivors.
Can this Vampire Survivors fad just end? I'm not into it.
No.
I didn't really like Vampire Survivors at all.
They're relatively cheap to produce. They will continue until the sun explodes.
The
sun explodes, Wheels.
Yeah.
I enjoy and appreciate that reference because I've been listening to that album all day.
That's good.
So, it's while I do love that game, it's I've played two weird clones that I'm like, all right, this is getting a little ridiculous. All
right, can we jettison that and talk music for a second? Because I just want to talk about how incredible the new Sublime album is, and also the fact that we have a new Sublime album.
Would you call it Sublime?
Yeah, that does. Yes. And it doesn't feel weird because it's the son taking over as a singer, and
I genuinely
sounds just like his dad, right? Yeah.
Well, it's not just that he sounds like his dad. I genuinely appreciated that, like, that lead single, "It Only Goes to the Sun Explodes," is very much about his relationship with a father who is famous, who he never knew.
Yeah. It's really just an incredible album. Just how it reflects on. Just all of Sublime, and is seems very personal to him. It's too good for this world.
Well, I guess there was a Sublime lyric where he said one of these days I'm going to lose the war. And my cousin explained to me he was talking about his heroin addiction. Yeah. He said basically you get clean or you die. And so when he said, "I'm going to lose the war one of these days, it's going to kill me." Yeah, it's very sad.
Heroin is fucked up, man.
Yeah, so one of my cousins, a huge Sublime fan, went to his gravestone in, I think, California, and met his father. Yeah, met Bradley's father. So the new guy,
the band's fire miner, by the way.
The other guy's grandfather at this point. So, yeah.
We should maybe. Are there questions that Fireminer is trying to draw our attention to?
I just want to bring that up because I think it's just a touching thing to have happened.
I'd like something
nice to eventually happen from that tragedy. Like, there's too many singers and amazing artists died from heroin. It sucks to think about. But yeah, check out the Sublime album. Yeah, Fireminer has some other stuff. Here, let me take a look. It's like this is all Tuhu related.
Yeah. I've been monitoring the Ask Wheels channel, and there's no questions in there.
Okay. Yeah, there's a remake of the first Tuhu game on Windows incoming. They cut it out of the English direct. That Tuhu remake.
I'm gonna put this out there. It's pronounced Toho.
I was going to say it is Toho.
In several languages.
People laugh at me when I say Sublime. They don't like that.
Surprise, Zuna said he doesn't want the mainline Toho games to be officially localized, which has a lot to do with him wanting to protect his canon. And if he isn't the person to do it himself, he'd rather not have someone else doing it in official capacity. Is there any other game developer, or novelist, or movie maker with the same attitude? An interesting note on one of the official Toho games, the 14th one, how many, you know what, I don't want to know how many there are, got officially released on Steam by Playism, but all the texts were left untranslated. Blazem said that they offered to translate it and let Zune supervise the script, but he turned it down, contrasting that to the Undertale's Japanese release, which was also localized by Playism, and Toby Fox was a huge Toho head, too. God, there's more of this.
Oh, God, I'm going to have to briefly, like, reference a controversy that exists where, like, so there are only two official localizations of Undertale and Deltarune, the English version and the Japanese. That's because Toby Fox actually has a similar attitude and said that he doesn't want to make an official localization that he can't understand well enough to, like, fully approve of. There are fan translations, and he says those are fine, but there was a dust-up about the fact that there won't be official localizations into languages he can't speak.
Okay.
Hmm. Yeah. Honestly, those are actually similar cases. Personally, I don't care. There's, like, fucking 3 pages worth of text in any given Toho game, and all the characters are kind of generic, so I don't care.
Yeah, I played Toho Luna Knights, and that was an okay...
That's a fan game.
Okay.
Like, mainline Toho games are all bullet hell shooters.
One other comment here. Zune also said at a convention that he didn't think too highly of gacha games and was glad the first Toho game eventually ended its service. But then you remember that Zune had personally endorsed a few Toho gacha games in official capacity. Oh, God. Including the one he was glad that it ended. Man, I gotta eat, I guess. Oh, man, gotta eat, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, like, in this case, given his habits, actually, man got a drink, but... yeah, no, it's just like, yeah, he's generally fairly permissive. Like, this entire remake apparently came about because, like, 5 different fan groups, like, asked him for the rights to remake this game, and he ultimately said, sure, you can all do it, and they all kind of got together to work on it. Like, yeah, I can't muster caring about this. I just don't care about Toho. It's just one of those things. Like, it's mildly interesting as, like, a cultural artifact, but, like, my brain just bounces off of, like, retaining knowledge about anything beyond, like, the broader cultural context. But yeah, like, the only, like, you'll find people that get various kinds of bent out of shape, but, like, ultimately, like, people who refuse to have their work translated into English tend to become obscure in English, so I can't think of many off the top of my head. So, yeah, like, Toby Fox himself kind of is the biggest example of this that I can think of, just because, again, there was that whole dust-up about how he doesn't want to officially promote a localization he can't read, and so that means that the only official versions of Undertale and Deltarune are in English and Japanese.
Okay, gotcha.
He has another question here. You know that there are people who grumble about American animated films hiring celebrity actors to do the dubbing instead of actual voice actors, yes? There is an upcoming Netflix anime called The Ribbon Hero that did just that, hiring comedians instead of professional voice actors. There seems to be quite a good number of Japanese fans angry about it, but are comedians that big in Japan in general? Anime voice actors are basically treated like idols over there.
I think, like, we also have kind of a skewed idea of how these things are perceived in the culture, because, like, outside of Japan, a lot of what filters to us is through an otaku lens. It's true that you can be it's much easier to be a super, like, a famous voice actor in Japan than it is than it is in anime dubbing, but, you know, you do have your, you know, beloved cartoon voice actors that have been at it for decades. Here, the other thing I would say is, like, there absolutely are situations where there's some sort of celebrity stunt casting that happens. I know that, like, in Japan, for its theatrical release, the Simpsons movie was actually not dubbed by the people who dubbed the rest of the series. And that definitely pissed people off, but it was just, oh, we're doing some stunt casting for the movie, because it's the movie. So they had just, like, different dub voice actors for that theatrical release. I'm given to understand it was redubbed by the normal voice actors for the DVD release. But, like, this is definitely not a... this is not new, unfortunately, and it's not unique to America.
Next question. Contextualism is an important tool for analyzing art, but how does it apply for the case of the upcoming Call of Duty? That game will be about North Korea invading South Korea, and people are already pointing out how it will come out hot on the heel of America withdrawing its military assets from South Korea, and so leaving Seoul high and dry. It will only piss off more South Koreans. Is it simply a victim of bad timing, or is there something more?
I mean, like, I'm sure that at the time that this was conceived, about 3 years ago, this was probably seen as, like, this is a safe thing to make this about. No one will get mad at this. And then we had the current climate that we do because of the stupidity of the people involved. So, yep. So it happened. But yeah, like, at this point, they, like, the people making it, like, I probably would have tried to do some last minute rewrites, but ultimately, what are you even going to do? There's very little you can you can conceivably do with that. Like, if you've already made tons of assets and shit, so they're just kind of having to roll with it. Like, the in terms of the things in Call of Duty that I find distasteful, this probably barely even.
Yeah. Oh, it's interesting.
I think that.
Oh, go ahead.
I think it's just
the awesome. Thing I was going to say was I think the people that it's going to piss off who already wouldn't be charitably inclined to a Call of Duty game to begin with, and that like if one is concerned about the game's sales in Korea, I mean they wouldn't have made this game in the first place. But the other thing I would say is like I would point to things like Call of Duty Ghosts, a game that has an extremely grotesque depiction of South America, where the primary complaint from South American players is the servers went down. God damn it, how am I supposed to play this? So, yeah. It's already... Some things never change. Okay, next point.
Okay, one moment. It's interesting to see how people react to Final Fantasy Resonant, which is a remake repackage of the discontinued Final Fantasy Brave Exvius gacha game.
I endorse gacha games getting reconstituted into real games. Continue.
I played Brave Exvius for a long time, so I know it's solid, all things considered. The thing people worry about most about Resonance is how they will distribute the rebalance, the enormous amount of characters and contents from the original game. There's a real chance that the collaboration characters like Ariana Grande won't be included, and Square Enix said that
Resonance... Yeah, she won't be in there.
That's a shame. Will mostly be based on the first season of Brave Exvius, and there were like five seasons of it.
Yes, what they have said is that this is like a reimagining based on the first season. We might end up seeing like further Resonance games that end up like reconstituting different parts of Brave Exvius. Or, you know, maybe this is just what they felt. Maybe they will just incorporate elements of the other seasons. I don't know how possible it would be to constitute those elements into into one cohesive package. But, you know, I do appreciate that, because, like, and this has become a trend for Square, because, like, Octopath Traveler Zero is also kind of this. But I think that it represents them just kind of deciding that, like, okay, the gacha game, you know, came out, it did well, it's kind of, you know, we're kind of done with that, it's not coming, like, it tailed off, so we might as well get something out of it. We put a lot of time and money into it, and there's a lot of, like, assets in terms of, like, art design, like, even though, you know, they're obviously remaking this, because it's HD2, you know, but... you know, assets in terms of art design and a story and like characters and like just a general cohesive idea of what game they're making, that, you know, that allows them to skip a lot of time in pre-production, and like it allows the team to have a very early idea of like, this is exactly what we're trying to make, this is what we are making, and those are important. That is a very key part of any game. But yeah, like I think that ultimately we're probably going to see more of this, because to Square, this is a way to release game faster with stuff they already have that otherwise was just gonna rot, because they're done with those gacha games. Like, hopefully this happens to other things like Opera Omnia or Mobius, like these games that had a lot of talent on them that ultimately, like, I would bring up, you know, the first thing that they did that did this to an extent was, at least in the modern age, was Theater of the Final Bar Line. Because Final Bar Line is just reconstituting what was done for the arcade, Theater Rhythm All-Star Carnival.
I didn't even realize that had an arcade game.
Yeah, there's a good YouTube video that kind of goes over the similarities between All-Star Carnival and Final Bar Line. It's by a good speedrunner / YouTuber named Punchy. Go look that up. But yeah, like, they've been, I think this is a good strategy, honestly, but like, they have been taking their dead mobile games and figuring out what they can do with them. What they can, like, once the gacha audience has decided they're done with them, what they can do to sell them to the core audience that contains both people who missed the gacha game and wish they could have that game to continue playing, and the core audience that wouldn't touch it, like us. So taking them, the bigger, more popular, more expensive gacha games, and turning them into normal games to sell is honestly, like, I think a strategy we're going to see more and more of from these companies that have made these very high, like, relatively speaking, these blockbuster gacha games. Like I said, bring on Final Fantasy Mobius. Of like, yeah. Reconstituting that into a game that had like half of the major Square Enix brain trust work on it, and it is completely dead in the water.
I wonder if they're already planning to do that for the Final Fantasy VII one, Ever Crisis.
I could fully see them doing an Ever Crisis as like another like take on FF7. Like, for people that want a more faithful remake of the original. But let me see. I'm looking at the list of the Murderer's Row of people who worked on Mobius Final Fantasy. Otomo Toriyama, director of FF13. Naoki Hamaguchi, director of FF7 Rebirth and Revelation. Kazushige Nojima, writer of like FF7, 8, 10, several of the Kingdom Hearts games. Daisuke Watanabe, writer on a bunch of the Kingdom Hearts and FF spinoffs, like a murderer's row of like the most important like character designs, like a murderer's row of like important people to Square Enix, all slaving away on a gacha game that was cast into the Shadow Realm.
It's a shame.
Yeah, like, that's what I'm saying. Like that feels like one of those ones that maybe one day we see that turned into, like, reconstituted into a normal game.
I can see it.
Any further follow-ups from Prime Matter?
I've previously asked about fictions using irony to preemptively confront critics. There's an example of this. It's a character in the final season of The Boys who was a scriptwriter. He kept complaining about how hard it is to write a TV finale because you got all those loose ends and all these character arcs. Thing is that you're to look at this character in the context of The Boys crashed and burned this final season. Using irony to acknowledge the flaws of your work, okay, but what happens when the irony is neither funny nor insightful? Won't it make you look even worse like a hack writer who used cynicism to hide his incompetence. The writer of the boys, Eric Kripke, also said did Supernatural and pulled the same trick there, and we all know how Supernatural crashed and burned. I don't actually, because I've never watched that show.
It ran for 15 years, and like its remaining audience went genuinely slightly insane at the response at the finale. But yeah, like in general, like the issue, like protective irony, this choice of getting meta just to like call yourself out, like it become like an obvious defense very, very quickly if you aren't willing to engage beyond the humor level. Like you can do a meta commentary on your own flaws. There's a lot of interesting things to be done with that. You'll get stuff like Grant Morrison's final issue on Animal Man, which is about Animal Man confronting Grant Morrison about a lot of the writing choices for that. It's a very strange thing, but it is like an actual attempt to grapple with the choices being made. When you just do, like, when you just poke fun at yourself, like, for something that you're saying, like, before you've even done something, like, with that finale thing, where, like, you're making a joke about how thing isn't going to, like, that it'll never work and that no one will ever be happy about it. All you've really done is prime the audience to be irritated at you for giving up and trying to force sympathy before you've even fucked over them over. Mm-hmm. There's just not a lot of interest in that, for the same reason that, like, you know, if you see someone spend all of their time being self-effacing as a way to protect themselves, it just gets tiresome. There's the infamous, there's a fairly infamous quotation that Orson Welles once made about Woody Allen that is adjacent to this. Let me pull this. Yes, this infamous interview quotation. I hate Woody Allen physically. I dislike that kind of man. He has the Chaplin disease. That particular combination of arrogance and timidity sets my teeth on edge. The interviewer responds with, "He's not arrogant, he's shy." And Orson Welles responds, "He is arrogant. Like all people with timid personalities, his arrogance is unlimited. Anybody who speaks quietly and shrivels up in company is unbelievably arrogant. He acts shy, but he's not. He's scared. He hates himself and he loves himself. A very tense situation. It's like me. It's people like me who have to carry on and pretend to be modest. To me, it's the most embarrassing thing in the world. A man who presents himself..." Let me get this thing here. "And who presents himself at his worst to get laughs in order to free himself from his hang-ups. Everything he does on the screen is therapeutic." But basically, that's kind of the attitude that they're getting at. Like, you've immediately attempted to get... to throw your feelings on the screen without really grappling with them, just trying to use them to protect yourself. And that immediately will set a significant portion of the audience against you.
Hmm. Yeah, well, all I can say about The Boys is just, I didn't read the comics. But they're the bad. Show is just, the show is Amazon making fun of Disney and MCU, and it's like, well, you're one to talk. Yeah, so that was something that kind of bothered me, but I mean, I still thought the show was entertaining. I like, you know, the characters, and I would say, yeah, while the final season certainly had its flaws and didn't always go in the direction I expected it to, I thought they stuck the landing in the end. I do like how it ended. But yeah, the character he's talking about is basically a mole man who helps them dig into, like, a prison compound, despite the fact that if Homelander finds out, he'll just laser him to death immediately. But then he's still working for Vought because he's afraid of Homelander. So it's weird. He's trying to be this, like, double agent, but he's not very good at it. Oh, I don't know.
This show sounds bad.
So I don't know how that ties into what the writers were trying, the real writers were trying to do, where they were just commiserating about their struggle. But it's like, yeah, I don't know. For five seasons, you just kept making fun of DC and MCU and Disney and your fucking Amazon. So I don't know. Whatever.
Don't worry, they were also making fun of Trump.
What?
I was making a joke. Don't worry, they were also making fun of Trump.
Tron? Okay.
Trump.
Oh. Well, yeah, that was obvious in season four, going into season five. Yeah.
Is
anyone able to grab the next question? I can't. Okay.
The new Nintendo 3DS fetch a good price on eBay, but that is partly because you don't have. You don't have a real good option to emulate the 3DS on a handheld. No, you really don't. But how many times have you seen old stuffs being so expensive while newer, cheaper, and better alternatives exist? I have seen some iPod Classic being resold at price higher than the original retail cost. Well, I mean, the iPod Classic was pretty awesome, though.
I mean, it's nice, but there's no particular reason to go back for it. Even if you just want a dedicated music player, they do sell them.
Yeah, you can.
They might not be Apple, but
you can buy an MP3 player, and I still have my old Samsung Galaxy Note 9 if I don't want to use my iPhone. But no, I was just getting at the point that you could just plug one of those into your computer and move music over to it, and there was no streaming or downloading or anything. And I can understand why.
Not anymore. You can't.
I'd be interested in that. Yeah.
Like if you're buying that, it's for kitsch value because like it's actually hard to get music onto now.
Yeah.
But.
I mean, and to the actual question, let's see, old stuff being expensive while newer, cheaper, and better alternatives.
I was going to say, I don't think emulation actually, like not having a great portable emulator for that necessarily has a lot to do with that, because there's other systems that still go for a high price. Like, it's still going to cost you a pretty penny to buy a Vita or a 3DS, and well, maybe there's not great emulation for Vita, but PSP, some other systems there are, and you still find some of those systems to be pretty expensive. So,
I mean,
there's absolutely like a fetishistic desire to just be able to have the old hardware, and so that always like a certain amount of it.
Yeah, I mean, I was surprised at how expensive the PS3 and the Vita still are, but then PS5 is now like $600, so yeah.
PS3 is not that bad.
No, it really isn't. But I mean, I'm wondering if people are going to be buying older generation consoles now because they can't afford the newer ones, and it's just cheaper to collect for, in some cases, not others.
I don't know. I honestly think they were doing that already. Like, I frequent like these retro shops a lot, and I always see people in there like looking for 360s and PS2s and things like that.
Yeah,
and getting like stacks of 360 games. Like, I think price has definitely got a lot to do with that.
Yeah, like. I just saw a random post on Blue Sky where the guy, it was a picture of a Dreamcast. He's like, look what I just bought today. I've never had one of these before. And I bit my tongue. I didn't say a word.
Well, that's a waste of money.
Exactly. Yeah. I didn't say a word. It was a total stranger, just a random thing in the Discover feed. I'm like, oh, no, you have fun, buddy. It's fine. You do you. I had a Dreamcast, and it's I hate that stupid thing. Okay, so then next part, and people bought them to add a flash drive, new battery, new operating system, while they could have had bought a newer iPod Touch or Sony Walkman without having to do all of those things. Yeah, there's something to be said for that. Like, I do see a lot of posts about people who bought old Game Boys and hacked them and added better screens and built in rechargeable batteries, and that's a very pricey, you know, DIY project that I wouldn't want to get into. Yeah, all I can say is back in 2020, I bought a cheap $400 guitar because I wanted one with three pickups and a double locking tremolo system with a whammy bar, and I just had never had a guitar like that before. But so my point is, I had this idea. I always wanted to like get like aftermarket pickups, and I always wanted to learn how to do that. And so yeah, I bought this cheap guitar, this $400 guitar, then bought $300 pickups, and then tried to teach myself how to solder wires. And of course, see, the problem was it had passive pickups built in, and I bought active pickups, not realizing it was a totally different wiring system. You know, and when I tried to rewire it all myself, I screwed it up and still had to pay somebody to fix it for me. And then in the process of restringing it, because I wasn't familiar with the bridge type or something, I ended up breaking part of it and had to get a new body. And I looked, you know, at some point I did look back on all the money I spent, and it's like I would have been better off just saving up and just buying an $800 or $900 guitar instead of trying to fix up something cheap. So yeah, I'm on the side of, yeah, maybe you should have just got, you know, saved up longer and gotten something newer. Although it is always important to learn new skills, I suppose, if you're willing to, you know, accept the expensive consequences. So I don't know. I guess I have mixed feelings about all of that. And of course, the fun thing I did was I have the NES mini console, and I got it to run the SNES mini console operating system and run those 21 built-in games instead of the 30 NES games. And I thought that was cool, although I'm now like, yeah, mini consoles were fun for a time, but now it's like, yeah, did you really need all of these? You know, you can just emulate this stuff on your computer. I guess that's all
like
I have to say about
those
questions.
Do I need all
questions.
These 3DSs? It's a ridiculous question. Of course I do.
Yeah.
Oh, bad dying game is bad dying game. Thanks, Tam. I hope your gacha game dies.
But I'm also glad I finally found a... I've been using the Kronos core for RetroArch.
God damn it, Tam.
So I've been having better luck with Saturn emulation lately, so I'm glad I have no desire to buy another one of those, and those games are so fucking goddamn expensive. So. Although there's people who have gotten that Evercade console and then gotten a special like flash drive, and I'm like, dude, didn't you defeat the whole purpose of buying that? You're supposed to buy those cartridges for it. That's the whole point to it. Like, you could have done that with any mini console, you know, just added more games to it. So. So, let's see. You're going to have to read the next one. I don't know what he's talking about. I'm sorry.
He's having a bad dub.
Something about Rhapsody. Yeah. Oh, what the hell is Rhapsody?
It's a Nipponichi series, the musical RPG.
Oh.
Speaking of dubbing, what do you think about this idea some Rhapsody fans have that not having the songs be dubbed in the recent Rhapsody 1 and 2 re-release, which have dubbed voice, is a negative? I've seen so many anime with their songs dubbed in the 90s, 2000s to know that it's not for me, but I also know some people who kind of like them, if only for how low rent they were. Is having a bad dub song more memorable than the original song with subtitles? Like, if you don't listen to foreign music much, how often do you remember a song that you can't understand? I would say pretty often. I like a lot of the recent animes I've watched that have undubbed songs I find quite memorable. So I think it's all about the actual melody of the song more so than necessarily any lyrics. And it's hard to say for some of these dub songs. Would they have been as memorable if they weren't? I mean, for some, like the original Pokemon, if that came out undubbed, that wouldn't have worked out well. I don't think that one was.
Yeah, it's more important for things for younger audiences. The audience can't be assumed to be a fast reader.
Yeah. Pew says, wasn't Rhapsody a Spotify-like app at 1.2?
Probably, but we're thinking of Rhapsody, a musical adventure.
Sometimes using generic words for your game title is not good.
That's why the full title is Rhapsody, a Musical Adventure.
True. Very true.
Okay. It's getting late. I feel like I should probably stop. Tamping down.
I'm just going to throw out the point of order that we will be away next week, because I will be in Disney World.
Somewhere in hell.
Yeah. Wait a minute. Is that what that is?
Say hello to our friend. Has he gotten back to you yet?
Yes, we're working on arrangements.
Okay, good. Good, good. He said he would he'd be getting to you this morning, and I wasn't sure if he had. So.
He did.
Hey, yeah, say hi to him for.
I will. I will be away on vacation. The Monday after, I may be tired from driving home, but I am determined to do that episode anyway. So we'll be back the week after. It also means no shenanigans this weekend. Okay. The following weekend, either I will actually make it home that night and be tired as shit and will not be doing anything, or I will be staying overnight somewhere on the way back, and I will have my Switch and Switch 2, but someone else would have to run the actual stream. But I may be up for Overwatch or something. But in all likelihood, 2 weeks off of shenanigans. But we'll see. Okay, to the usual plugs.
Well, Gaijin's not here, but wanted to point out that Vainglorious Long Is the Night will be on sale. Hopefully this goes up fast enough for you to take advantage of that. The Litroidvania of your dream? Available on Amazon, via Kindle and Kindle Unlimited. I think there's also a physical version of that. If you go looking for Michael Yadi Mitsu, you can correct me if I'm wrong. Don't actually correct me if I'm wrong. It will hurt my feeling. But yeah. Vainglorious Long Is the Night. If you're tired of lit RPGs and you want to move into a new genre, enjoy a Litroidvania. There's also still Princesses of the Pizza Parlor. That's not on sale, at least to my knowledge, but, you know, that's still good. There's still a lot of it, and it's still very cheap anyway. It's cheap enough as to be on sale. You know, there's a lot there. There's also Tanuki at a Teapot, which is Japanese folk tale, some of which don't really have other English translations. That's always delightful. And then you have Adult Fare, written under the name Michael Spearwater, also available on Amazon. That's more for the adult. There's Wager for Wanderlust, and I think Sin of Tantalus, if I'm remembering the name right. I'm bad with these. There's a lot of stuff available for, so support and indie. But yeah, Vainglorious in particular is on sale. That will be available from Michael Yarimizu, Yarimizu, if you're looking for Kindle books. Joe, tell us where we can find you.
Okay, so I'm still streaming for RP Gamer. I've been playing Mina the Hollower. During my last stream, I died a bunch of times, and then some really creepy, scary things happened, but I'd like to keep playing. So, yeah, on Tuesday and Thursday nights from around 10 p.m. to 12 a.m., sometimes a bit later if I'm running late, I'll be streaming that on the RP Gamer channel on Twitch. And I also have a YouTube channel under Smoke and Joe Gamer. And last month I did some videos for a bunch of different Metroidvanias, so if you want to check those out. And I also did a short video of just the beginning of Reanimal if you're into horror games. So yeah, you check out my YouTube channel. I got all kinds of content on there, and you can also follow me on Blue Sky. Currently, my username, I think, is JoeyController Guitar at smokeajoegamer.bsky.social, whatever. So You can follow me on there, and you can chat with me on Discord. I'm in the RP Gamer server and the Ask Wheels server. And you can join the RP Gamer server. Just be aware of the server rules and don't be creepy and weird and, you know, don't fight with the staff members because you'll get banned. So.
But can I follow you on Mastodon? Be nice.
Not anymore, no. No, I was on Mastodon for a little while, and no followers, no engagement, no nothing. It was like this.
Oh, you have to work to talk to anyone on Mastodon.
Yeah, I know. And I'm not willing to do the work, I guess.
Nothing but nerd.
It's true. Linux nerds, and we are the worst kind of nerd. Trust me.
Yeah.
We're literally the worst. You should uninstall Windows, install Linux, so that you can compile the programs yourself.
I want to hit you in the head with a tire iron.
That's fair. Wait, why would that? Why is that fair? Why am I saying this?
I was gonna say, why did
what
you?
What part of that is fair?
Yeah. You can catch us from me by going to twitch.tv/askwheels or twitch.tv/rpgamer Mondays at somewhere around 8:30 Pacific, 11:30 Eastern. Except next Monday because Wheels will be gone. I also normally have shenanigans on Saturdays. I think yesterday y'all were playing Overwatch until I died. And well past it, actually. But, you can always catch, not this Sunday or the following Sunday, but most Sundays. Yeah, Pacific, midnight, Eastern. You can also ask us if you catch us when we're streaming this podcast. Like Dear Fire Miner did, as well as several people in the chat before we started. Like, thanks to, I think you and Hollywood were there. Maybe. Maybe just you.
Hollywood was in the chat. Hollywood popped into voice chat before we started recording to see if I was playing.
Oh, that's. Oh, awful. Dreadful.
I think.
I rescind my thanks. Hollywood.
Moncappy showed up. I think Hero Harmony gave us a wave to know he's watching.
Always nice to hear from y'all, even if it's just recording just to hear it. We're always happy. But, yeah. But, you know, if you ask us questions, like our dear friends in chat, we'll always appreciate it. You can also ask questions by asking in the chat under this very episode, or you can ask us questions, not in the chat, if in the comments section of this very episode, or by going to the Discord. And those questions in the podcast section. Otherwise, I think that about wraps for us. See you, Space Cowboy.
See you.
See you.
Giggly Mama. I've almost got
Why are you saying what, Pew? Because we said your name? We were thanking everyone in chat. Or were you saying what?
This is Mole Man in the morning. Good feet. Mole Man to you.
I was gonna add stuff to the sound panel, and I keep forgetting to do it.
It's not like we need anything but Mole Man.
What about this?
This is the way.
Okay.
What fun! What fun!
I hate you more every week.
You know what? He just left.
Yeah, these are bad. I need to get rid of half of these.
Here, you like this.
Do we still need this?
No!
Can
we get rid of this?
No. Law.
Buy my Dang book!
Yes, we still need that.
Yeah, that's important. Very important.
Good moment interview.
Dang it. Oh, I didn't end the... Okay. Alright, ending RP Gamer stream. Peace out, folks.
Good Lord. Good Lord.
Some hope for the future. Some wait for the call. To say that the days ahead will be the best of all. We will build bridges up to the sky. Heavenly lights surrounding you and I. From out of the darkness, our future will come. If we leave the past behind, we'll fly beyond the sun. Sharing the load, watching in wonder as our lives unfold. Hope for the future, it's coming soon enough. How much can we achieve? Hope for the future, it will belong to us if we believe. Hope shines brightest in the dark when nothing's ever seen. Lighting undiscovered places no one's ever been. For the call to say that our destiny will be the best of all, and we will build bridges up to the sky and heavenly lights surround. Hope shines brightest.